education, work, responsibility. What we think about these depends on our worldview. Now, VCY America presents Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House.
All right, welcome. Glad you're with us. Going to be joined today by Leo Holman and by our friend Olivier Melnick. Olivier Melnick. The breaking news among many of us today as we laugh and smile is a big explosion, and down comes the Georgia Guidestones, the demonic, satanic Georgia Guidestones. Now, of course, I'm not encouraging anybody to do anything or vandalize anything. I thought maybe they just fell down on their own, like God just went, boop, you know, and boom, down they went. Like the little flick of his finger, boop, gone. But, you know, God's a spirit, so he doesn't have hands. But he could cause wind, whatever he wants. But I hear there's an explosion, and maybe that was just God. Boom, down it goes. I don't know. But I'm pretty happy today. I got great news today, folks. Good news. Georgia Guidestones. Down, in shambles, in rubble. I think that's a great thing. Again, not encouraging anyone to break the law. And if someone did, that they may be in trouble, but I'm glad. I'm a happy guy right now. These things are demonic, in my opinion. Pagan, demonic, pro-murder, pro-abortion, pro-one-world government, Luciferian, whatever you want to call it. And I don't know why the state of Georgia allowed it anyway, but I guess you have to have free speech for them too, right? So we're going to talk about that with Leo. But first, we're going to be joined by our friend Olivier Melnick, his website, newantisemitism.com. Olivier, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brannon. Always a pleasure being on your show.
Do I have that right, newantisemitism.com?
Newantisemitism.com, yes, and also on YouTube, Olivier Melnick, Today It's With Jewish Eyes.
Okay, good. Now, I want to talk about a couple things. First is the PC, Presbyterian Church of America USA, burning the Judeo-Christian bridge further. We'll talk about that in a minute. New article by you. We've also posted it over at worldviewtimes.com. But I want to talk about this tragedy in Highland Park. It has since come out and being reported by the Gateway Pundit that the shooter, and I don't want to use his name, because this is, you know, these guys get too much credibility and notoriety, and that encourages more. But the Highland Park shooter, according to the Gateway Pundit, who has scurried over his social media page, has found that he had a lot of connections to Antifa, a lot of symbolism to Antifa. They're claiming witchcraft, pagan occultism and symbols, Democrat Society of America, which is the largest and fastest growing socialist organization in the U.S. That was on his social media platform, the Antifa flag, all of these things. So this guy, you know, is not a Trump supporter, was not a conservative. I know the media wants to make that out, but as is the case, almost 99.9% of all these people are would be card-carrying members of the Marxist Democratic Party. So good try, good try, cackling Kamala, but he's one of yours, so you can own him. Then we find out that a rabbi says he walked into his synagogue on Passover. So I don't know what this guy's thing is. It's too early to say, but we got some red flags here, and we need to look at, was this guy even considering targeting that synagogue? Thoughts, Olivier?
Yes. Well, you know, Brannon, you know, anti-Semitic events against Jewish people, I mean, you have me on your show regularly. It's not to talk about the weather. It's because something happened against the Jews. And so this guy, we don't know, like you said, and I agree with you, this is really a developing story, but there's a lot of red flags. And the first question I have is, you know, at this time of the year, when there was a parade on the streets of America, there's plenty of parades, you know, why would this guy go and start shooting people in a very Jewish neighborhood of Chicago suburbs?
Yep.
You know, he could have gone anywhere if he was really anti, fill in the blank, whatever you wanted to be anti, you know, against. Why did he pick a Jewish neighborhood? So that's a question that really needs to be at the forefront of whoever's doing the investigation. He did go into a synagogue. Apparently, he was there for about 45 minutes during a Passover, you know, sitting in the back and watching. So was he interested in Jewish heritage and Jewish things? Well, I don't know anything about this guy beyond what I've read and seen the picture of this guy. It doesn't look like he was the kind of guy that would want to go participate into a Passover. Again, I might be accused of being profiling here, but it's very possible that he was there to scope the place and maybe come back and do some damage later. We don't know that. But the fact that he was in the synagogue and then he went back and went to on a killing rampage in a Jewish neighborhood, it does raise some red flags.
Absolutely. And I hate to say this, but we have been talking about the rise of anti-Semitism. I did two conferences, one in the Ozarks and one from our studio, on Holocaust rising, Holocaust rising, and that we would be seeing the rise of another Holocaust. Little did we know that Holocaust first would happen with all of us through the COVID shot and the vaccines, which is killing and maiming all kinds of people and blood clots like crazy. But we are setting up for another Jewish Holocaust, and the Bible even tells us that that's coming. Does it not, Olivier?
Yes, unfortunately, Brandon, this is true. You know, this is something that I started writing on 20 years ago, and when I started telling people in churches and in different conferences of what was coming, they look at me like I was from a different planet. They said, like, well, this is not possible. And here we are, and even further than I thought in my own lifetime, and if you look at it from a biblical standpoint, we know that in the end times, whichever way you look at it, Brandon, we're not really approaching the end times. We're at the 59th minute of the 11th hour. That's why I feel where we are right now. And we know that at the end times, before Yeshua, Jesus, comes back at the end of the 7-year tribulation, what's going to trigger that is the Jewish people calling him and accepting him as the Messiah. And when that happens, Satan is completely out of a job, and he's going to burn in hell for the rest of eternity. And he knows that when that happens, what makes it start is Jewish acceptance of the Messiah. And so if he can stop the Jewish people from believing in Jesus or use the whole world like he is right now to go after the Jews, then his job is secure. So he is behind anti-Semitism, and he is going to push for the complete destruction of the Jews. This is what you read in the middle of the book of Revelation, and it's going to be pushed by Satan and whoever he's using to do so. Now, we know he's not going to succeed because God will never renege on Israel, and there's always going to be a remnant of Jewish people, and he's never going to allow Israel to be destroyed, but we know that Satan is going to do whatever he can, and he's already managed to get a lot of casualties in the Jewish community over the centuries.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about your latest article. We put it up at worldviewtimes.com. Is PC USA burning the Judeo-Christian bridge further? PC stands for the Presbyterian Church of America, correct?
That is correct, yes. It is a church that in the last couple of decades, at least, as they haven't been very, very friendly to Israel. Every 2 years, they have their, I guess what you can call their General Assembly of sorts, when they vote on various things. And I remember, I think it was 4 years ago when I watched the entire thing online, and it was painful to just watch those people vote and discuss and this, but it was online, so I watched it, and it ended up being 49% against Israel, 51% in favor, and so that didn't pass. Well, that was 4 years ago, and now the scale has tipped over into the enemies of Israel. So now it's more than half of the church is against Israel, promoting the BDS, the boycott, divestment, sanction movement, saying that Israel is an apartheid state, and that's what they're pushing in this latest General Assembly, passing resolutions. And actually, in my article, I put a link to the resolution INT02 that was voted 28 in favor and 3 against, stating that PCUSA recognized that Israel's law, policies, and practices regarding the Palestinian people fulfill the international legal definition of apartheid. So they're basically saying, we are now officially saying that Israel is committing apartheid against against Palestinians. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, again, and apartheid is so there's some kind of racist country, and yet they keep going over to Ethiopia and scooping up black Ethiopian Jews and bringing them back to Israel and providing for them and housing them and feeding them and training them and assimilating them. Yeah, when was the last time you saw a racist apartheid country scooping up black folks to bring back into their country?
Well, yeah, but that's not I agree with you, Brandon, but I'm not even sure that the people that accuse Israel of apartheid understand what apartheid is all about. That's a good point. Apartheid is a racial thing, and they use the word apartheid in more of a geopolitical meaning, where like it's an apartheid country because they're pushing the Palestinians away from their own land, which of course is not the truth. I mean, it's not their own land, but they're redefining apartheid to be more than racial or to be something else than racial, and that's why they can use it in their own mind. They can use it that way. But you're right, apartheid originally, and the meaning of apartheid is a racial separation.
So, sadly, we have to go back again to theology, and sadly, their theology and their eschatology is setting up for the anti-Semitism, because wouldn't many of these PCA churches buy into replacement theology?
Oh, yeah, they would. Now, of course, you know, you've heard me say this before on your show, Brandon. We never want to paint with broad strokes and say that all PCA USA parishioners are all anti-Semitic, they're all replacements. No, that's not true.
Right.
That's not true.
Right.
But the question I would have, though, is that if you're not that way and the church is pushing for that, why do you stay under that denomination? But that's for another day. But the replacement theology really is in the effort for the listeners who might not know what it is a folk doctrine that apparently teaches that the Bible tells us that since the Jews rejected Jesus as the Messiah, now God has moved all of his promises and covenants onto the Gentile branch of the church, and now the church has replacement theology has replaced the Jewish people as the recipients of all of God's blessings and covenants, and the Jews have been relegated to something else, but they're no longer in the recipients of God's promises. The problem with that, theologically and biblically, is that God swears by his character and by his own person, saying that I will never change my mind, and we know God doesn't change. God doesn't change his mind. So to say that he's now fulfilling his promises with the church and not with Israel and the Jewish people is making him a covenant breaker and making him into a liar. That's what they're doing. They won't admit that, but that's what they're doing.
All right, my guest, Olivier Melnyk, newantisemitism.com, newantisemitism.com. We're going to finish up with Olivier on the other side of the break, and then we'll be joined by Leo Holman. The breaking news today, there's a lot of breaking news today, but the one that we're really going to hit on here in a minute is the Georgia Guidestones. Well, maybe you don't even know what those are. We'll tell you what they are, but I guess they came falling down today. A big explosion was heard. We'll even show you some pictures. Leo Holman will join us in just a minute. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Glad you're with us. Worldview Radio, website worldviewradio.com, worldviewradio.com. All right, before we let you go, Olivier, what other big items are you watching in the news right now, Olivier?
What I'm watching in the news right now, well, in the last few months, there's been a lot of flyers going in. I think it's like 8 or 9 states now, anti-Semitic flyer. I just got a personal friend of mine just sent me a copy of it that they found in their neighborhood in Southern California, anti-Semitic flyer that seemed to be coming from the same source known as GoyimTV.com. And they're basically accusing just about everybody to be, you know, everything to be Jewish-owned, Jewish-run, Jewish-controlled. But that's causing people to become, you know, bolder about their anti-Semitism and going after the Jews. So I might be back on your show maybe in a later time to talk about those flyers and kind of dissect them a little bit and see why they're dangerous.
Yeah. We'd like for you to come back and do that. All right. Give your website. Tell our folks what they'll find there, please.
Okay, all my books can be found on Amazon or on my website at newantisemitism.com. And also I have a lot of videos on, if you type my name, Olivia Melnick, on YouTube, Olivia Melnick, Today Through Jewish Eyes. A lot of teaching videos and a lot of commentary, and they could find me there.
Okay. As always, we love having you on. Keep us posted. Thank you for your great articles, Olivier.
God bless, Brandon. Talk to you soon.
You too. Olivier Melnick checking in. Logan, do you guys have my computer? Can you show this screen here? All right, guys, we got a big announcement. I made the announcement, I think, last night on TV, but I'll make it here. We are building another studio, if you look at the screen, for those watching by television. We actually already have that news desk. We actually travel with that. Many of you saw it at the Ozarks Worldview Weekend. We're able to travel with it. We'll have it with us at CPAC again coming up soon. But we'll have that desk with the TV built into it. And then that backdrop, that stone wall on the left. Of course, we won't go with that ugly yellow light. We'll go with something better than that. But that stone wall to the left with the TV monitor hanging in there, and then the grid panel, we're designing our own graphic, so we will not have that graphic. In fact, as I'm on the air right now, I've been texting back and forth with our graphic guy, Jeb, and he's designing what it'll look like for that blue area, that blue backdrop area. So we're designing a whole new studio, not to replace this one, but in addition to this one, because we're having a hard time getting people in here like Usama and others to film their shows because I'm in here 4 hours a day. So when they come to town, we generally like for them to come in the studio and spend, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours at a crack, 8 hours. And of course they take breaks for lunch and whatever. So, you know, they need to really have an 8-hour block where the studio is just available to them to film. And we don't have that because I'm in here 4 hours. Plus we have to have preparation before each show and whatnot. So we're having to build a second studio. We have the blackout curtains all being ordered. We have the backdrops being designed and ordered. And this is what it'll look like, similar to this. This will also be the new set, and this is the announcement. This will be the new set for a new show that I will be starting this fall on Sunday mornings. I won't be live on Sunday mornings. We'll pre-tape up on Friday afternoon or Saturday. And then Sunday morning, we'll be launching a Sunday morning news show. Many of you like to watch a Sunday morning news show. You get up, have your breakfast before you go off to church. It's not uncommon for you, probably, I'm sure for many of you, to turn on the TV and watch that morning news show while you're having your breakfast and see what's going on and what went on in the week. Well, that's what we'll be starting, a Sunday morning news show to be the alternative to things like, you know, This Week or Meet the Press or Fox News Sunday, because we know what trash is on most of those outlets, right? So we are. And one of the reasons we're doing this is not only because we want to fill the void that's lacking. We have seen what Worldview Report has done. When I came up with the idea of the Worldview Report, a 30-minute newscast, 30-minute straight newscast, which, by the way, takes 7 of us 15 man hours a day to put together. Leo is one of our associate producers on that broadcast. The response has been huge. We now have 6 networks, including VCY America's TV 30, 6 networks that have picked that up. 6. And others are talking to us. We have 2 other networks talking to about picking it up. There's nothing out there like that. There's not a 30-minute conservative, highly professionally produced show like Worldview Report. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go to WVWTV.com, WVWTV.com, and you can see it. And so due to that success, we are now being asked, listen now, we're being asked by other conservative networks, do you have more programming? Do you have more programming you can push to us, shove our direction? And, of course, we say yes. And then I told them, I'm looking at launching a Sunday morning news magazine program. So there's a real void, clearly. Otherwise, why, since we started the Worldview Report in December, do we now have six networks that have picked it up with two more talking to us? Because there is a void. Now, there are a lot of people out there with podcasts and shows, but we're talking about professionally produced TV, not someone who's just, you know, thrown up a camera and sitting there talking. We're talking about professionally produced programming, and that's what we have desired to do from the beginning. As you guys know, when I started television, I said to do it, it has to be professional. It has to be broadcast quality, and that's what we've endeavored to do. So thank you to all of you that have been supporting what we have been doing these many, many years as we grow, and we are growing, and as we add in new programming. So I'm excited to announce this fall we will be starting a new Sunday morning news magazine program, looking at the big stories of the week, the stories to come, and it'll be, again, highly professionally produced. We'll show the screen again, and this is very similar to what the new studio will look like, as we're working now with the company that produces and manufactures these kind of sets. Ours will look even way better than this because we won't use that yellow wall or that yellow lighting on that stone wall. We'll get a better lighting than that. But that's the beautiful thing about it. You can pick the colors you want to light that up. That you can change those. It's in the manufacturing. And then we're going to have a better graphic than that for the blue wall behind us. So anyway, we're excited about it. We're going. We're growing. And we want to thank all of you that have helped us to get where we are today. Joining me now is Leo Holman, leoholman.com, leoholman.com. Leo, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for being with us. And you've got the breaking story this morning. My phone started blowing up from all over the country about the Georgia Guidestones. Give us the latest, please, Leo.
Yes, this is breaking news out of Elbert County, Georgia, which is about 100 miles northeast of Atlanta, not too far from the South Carolina border with Georgia. And there is something called the Georgia Guidestones Monument that has been there for 42 years. It was erected originally on private property, very mysteriously, was not there one day and was there the next day. It was a multimillionaire who built it, not a name anyone would recognize. I published an in-depth article about the Guidestones back in 2017. People can find it in my article today. I've linked to that earlier story if they want the background. But the breaking news, Brannon, is that around 4 a.m. this morning, this monument, which has always been very controversial from the very day it was found to have been erected, because it calls for the elimination of about 90% of the world's population, from about 7.5 billion, they want to take that all the way down, according to these guidestones, which includes 10 guidelines for humanity, the future for sustaining the future of humanity. The one that pops out among others on this monument is to maintain a global population of no more than 500 million. So there's only one way to get there, and that would be a massive genocide. And so that's why it's so controversial. But at 4 a.m. this morning, this monument was blown up. An explosive device apparently was detonated, according to the GBI, Georgia Bureau of Investigation. They issued a statement around 12 noon today that an explosive device was, quote, detonated by unknown individuals. And so this controversial monument, some people have called it the Monument of the Devil or the Devil's Ten Commandments, it's now laying in rubble in rural Georgia.
Well, I was really...
The monument on the ground. Other half still standing, but you can see the cracks and everything.
There's the image for those watching on television. I was really hoping that would not be the case. I was really hoping that maybe this was just something that absolutely unexplainable, kind of like the UFO sightings from our U.S. pilots off these ships, that we can't explain this, something of supernatural nature. Really, I think they're UFOs, I think from the demonic realm. But I was hoping this was of the biblical realm, and that maybe God had enough, and he just went, boom, and boom, gone. You know, kind of the Big Bang. God's Big Bang on the the Georgia Guidestones. So I'm quite pleased. I don't like this thing, but I also am not endorsing or condoning people using explosives and blowing up private property. But I can't tell you I'm sad about this. How do you take it?
No, I've been out there personally when I wrote the original article in 2017, Brandon. It's a very dark place. You can feel the spiritual heaviness hanging over this place. It sits out in the middle of a cow pasture off of a rural secondary highway, Highway 77, in a very rural county. The people there are kind of oblivious to the spiritual element of it. You can tell that. And the other thing that was notable, and by the way, when we were out there in 2017, there were clear, obvious witches there dressed in black, treating it as some sort of holy ground. There's a continuous flow of anything from New Age hippies to witches, warlocks, and other sorts of demonically inspired people. And then there's just, you know, you have your regular curiosity seekers, just normal folks who have heard about it and drift through the area to have a look. But the other thing that jumped out at me, besides the spiritual darkness that I felt, was this thing is surrounded by cameras. And cameras on the edifice itself, which is built out of granite. Cameras out in the fence in the cow pasture. So whatever was done there at 4 a.m. this morning, it would be on video.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Okay, here's the Georgia tweet. Georgia Bureau of Investigation. The GBI and Elbert County Sheriff's Office are investigating an explosion that destroyed the Georgia Guidestones near Elberton, Georgia. The preliminary information indicates that unknown individuals detonated an explosive device at around 4 a.m. Wednesday, July 6th. All right. Well, there you go. Well, we'll keep you posted on that. So I'm guessing it had to be somebody that felt that this thing was just some kind of satanic, demonic thing, and they wanted it gone? I mean, what do you think? Or is this...
Or it's a false flag.
That's what I was going to say. Or it's a false flag to say, look at the white supremacist Christians, they're at it.
Right, right. So I hope we find out one way or the other. Like I said, it will be on video. Whether the authorities, the local sheriff's department, and the GBI, whatever the GBI gets involved, Brandon, that's a bad sign. The GBI here in Georgia is much like the FBI. They're very political. They release information based on their political views, which are very liberal. And so if it is a false flag, you know, we'll probably never find out.
Yeah. All right, let's come back and discuss some of the other issues and get ready to open the phone lines. We'll be right back after this break. It's Worldview Radio, our website, worldviewradio.com. Hey, guys. All right, welcome back. Glad you're with us. Worldview Radio, our website, worldviewradio.com, worldviewradio.com. All right, Leo Homan joins me. His website, leohoman.com, Leo, H-O-H-M-A-N-N, leohoman.com. Leo, what do you make, I'm going to show on the screen here, the Gateway Pundit has gone all through the social media pages of the Highland Park shooter. What do you make of his images, reportedly Democrat Socialists of America on his website, Antifa flags, Antifa images? What do you make of this?
Yeah, Joe Hoff did a great job of looking up this guy's social media posts before they could be wiped clean by, you know, the different social media platforms, which we know from our, you know, years and years of covering these types of stories that the social big tech social media platforms work in collusion with the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and the entire U.S. national security apparatus to cleanse their platforms of any incriminating evidence against these types of individuals who pull off these things. So credit, kudos to Joe Hoff for scooping that stuff up before they could take it down. And he nails it. I mean, he just utterly nails it. The pictures, more than the article at Gateway Pundit, the pictures are worth a thousand words, as the saying goes. They show this individual in all his glory, you know, bragging about, he's got just bizarro pictures on his social media, you know, dressed in the Antifa black face mask with a black helmet, doing some kind of Heil Hitler sign, you know, to apparently the DSA, Democratic Socialists of America. You know, just one bizarre photo after another. And this is not a normal human being. You can tell by the pictures. I don't know who his parents are, but they've done a pathetic job of raising this young man. He's only 21 years old. And you can tell from his Facebook posts or whatever else social media these were posted to. Actually, he had one of his own sites as well that this was gathered from. You know, he's just all about violence. He's all about left-wing politics. And yet the mainstream corporate media is trying to make him out as some sort of Trump supporter, Trump-loving Republican. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. Hang on, I got to plug my audio in. Hold on. Because I want to play a clip. Did you hear, Karen Kingston is going to join me tomorrow, and you should probably join us to comment on what we're going to do. Did you see the show last night at all with Karen Kingston and what we were playing?
I did, yes. It was very, very disturbing.
Okay, this is a guy named Professor James Girardano, Georgetown University, chief of neuroethics program, works reportedly with the intelligence community, military, and Pentagon. And this is out there on YouTube, and he speaks about at the 14 minute and 14 second, hold on, let me back, that's him. At the 1440 mark, I'm going to get to the 1440 mark. At about the 1440 mark, he starts talking about his work with the intelligence community. Listen to this.
Or about the capability of not just potential opponents, but virtually anyone, has indeed been an area that has been delved as neuromarketing. Understanding how brains work to do the things that minds do then allows us to better understand how to affect psychological interactions with various groups of people so as to be able to engage certain brain reactions that affect their bodily behaviors. That's a nice way of saying I can affect minds to affect hearts. Yes, the neuromarketing community has done a wonderful job in that, but that has not gone beyond the pale of understanding how neuroscience and technology and the information we know about brains and what they do may also be of key value to the intelligence area, as well as psychological operations. Some of the ongoing work we've been doing with the Strategic Multi-Level Assessment Group at Pentagon has focused upon this exclusively over the past 8 years in a series of white papers, and I'll provide those references to you at the end of this lecture, and certainly they're available to you in the note pack. They're available directly from the Pentagon. You can get them from Joint Staff. If you don't have the access to that website, I'll provide it at the end. As well, I'll be happy to provide you with each and all of those. Our point of contact there is a gentleman named Sam Rem, and I'll give you his email as well. And what we've shown over the past 8 or 9 years over our convening the strategic multi-level group, particularly the NeuroCog group, is that indeed the viability of these techniques has grown. If we look at where neuroscience was in 2008 versus was or was in 2014, we see that that capability delta has rendered the neurosciences very viable for their use in intelligence operations. The more we know about the way people think and tick, the more we may be able to develop those techniques and technologies to alter the way they think and tick. Still, existing in the soft weaponology side, because essentially we're not necessarily using the brain sciences directly to affect another individual. We're using this solely with regard to their ripple impact in terms of what they're able to do to an economic market or what neuroscience information is able to allow us to understand about the way we interact with others. A key example of this latter function exists within a DARPA program called Neural Networks or Narrative Networks. The program manager there was Bill Casebeer.
Now, notice he said DARPA. Before I keep playing here, this is said to be a Georgetown neurotechnology expert, Dr. Giordano, G-I-O-R-D-A-N-O. He said DARPA. You want to remind our audience what DARPA is, Leo?
Yes, that is the High Technology Investigative Research arm of the Department of U.S. Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, this guy is, in my opinion, this guy is a skilled communicator.
Yes.
He is skilled. If you watch his video and his body language, and he is not watching notes, he's not reading notes, his moving around the room, his body language, his hands, his just his intonation, his pausing, this guy is a skilled communicator.
What is his name again, Brandon?
Well, my name is Brandon.
Did I say Brandon?
his name is, let me get it for you on my email here. His name.
I don't want to make that mistake.
That's exactly. Professor James, and then Giordano. Giordano?
Okay.
Georgetown University Chief of Neuroethics Program. And we just heard him talking about working with that, right? With that group. Now, I want to move ahead to, I played some
I
of these.
Can I just say one quick thing on that,
yeah,
Brandon?
Yeah.
The quote, that the thing he said that really jumped out at me was he said, the more we know about how people think and tick, the more we can alter what they think.
That's right.
And think about that in terms of the Chinese scientists who came out just this week and said they had invented a new AI program that can read people's minds.
Well, listen to this. Watch this. Okay? This is at the 30 minute and 58 second mark. Listen to this.
Who spoke to all of us, and he gave us a very rousing message and talked to us how specifically we need to engage science and technology. If I were, for example, able to modify the coffee that he drank, the water that he drank this morning, with an undetectable chemical that was delivered at a very, very low range, and he gets up before you and he says, this is all bunk, ladies and gentlemen, you shouldn't be here in this room, I don't believe a word of what I'm going to hear, and my particular concern is, with regard to the United States Army, is we should move in other directions, and we should basically work on potting flowering plants. You think one of two things. Either he's completely gone wackadoodle and lost his rocker, or I'm going to follow this guy to the end of the earth because he's not only a power-driven leader, he is, in fact, a charismatic leader who I believe in. So the ability to affect a single individual, whether it is a military leader, a political leader, or a diplomat, through the use of modifiable brain functions at very, very low levels of non-detectable drugs that exist in the high nano range is, in fact, creating a ripple effect by virtue of their followers, either an affiliative effect or a disruptive effect. Moreover, we recognize we can also use a variety of microbiological agents to incur a whole host of morbidities, but not necessarily mortality. And what we may want to do is to utilize these first two in such a way that creates a very, very broad ripple effect to then essentially dissolve the fiduciary between the public and the public health. Let me give you an example, and it's an example that I use.
Okay, let me back up on his slide here. His slide says, in close pharmaceuticals and organic neurotoxins. And then under that, the bullet, ultra-low dose / high specify agents for use in targeting diplomatic / local culture, and then in quotes, hearts and minds scenarios. Then he's going on, so you just heard we talked about doing that. Then high morbidity neuromicrobiological agents, neuromicrobials with high neuropsychiatric symptom clusters for public panic / public health disintegrative effects. And then he talks gene-edited microbiologicals with novel morbidity / mortality profiles. Let's listen to what he says about this and have Leo respond.
Mortality. And what we may want to do is to utilize these first two in such a way that creates a very, very broad ripple effect to then essentially dissolve the fiduciary between the public and the public health. Let me give you an example, and it's an example that I used in a recent article that I wrote for the Defense News. I'll give it to you very, very briefly. What I do is I either use a drug in very, very low concentrations that may not necessarily be traceable. And again, this is highly doable. You just have to permeate the edge of a drinking vessel or an atmospheric vessel, get the drug on board. It kind of auto-assembles in situ because of nanopharmacology. Very difficult to trace, and it creates a biological downstream effect. Nothing I'm telling you here is sci-fi. It all exists within the medical range and how we're able to treat a variety of neurological disorders targeting the brain, being able to get in there more specifically, affect certain neural cancers, et cetera. And what we can do with some of these drugs is we can also use these techniques that we're learning on the pharmaceutical side to modify certain bugs. And we spoke earlier about a technique that's become very well known, CRISPR-Cas9, that allows us to literally modify bugs in a variety of different ways. So I now may be able to take a relatively harmless microbiological agent, a bacterium or a virus, do some gene editing and make this thing far more morbidly viable, make it far more virulent, and in some cases even make it far more lethal. But I don't want lethality, at least not necessarily. What I want is high morbidity. I want people to complain. So what do? I go to Des Moines. Ladies and gentlemen, and people on the screen, I have nothing against Des Moines. I lived there for 4 years. I go to Des Moines. I infect a couple of sentinel cases in Des Moines. I go to Seattle. I infect a couple of cases there. I go to North Carolina. I go to Wisconsin. What I'm doing is I'm using a dispersion methodology to be able to infect sentinel cases with a highly morbid condition. These individuals complain. Again, this is a central nervous system condition. So they're complaining of whatever the bug may do. It'll produce some cascade of neurological and neuropsychiatric signs and symptoms. And then what I do, the real bug that I use, is the internet. I take attribution for that. Yes, I'm a terrorist group. And I have done this by infecting with a highly lethal agent, and the first signs and symptoms of lethality are X, Y, and Z. These people are really sick with this. But then I say, others who are also infected will show subdromal, predromal signs of lethality, and what that will be is anxiety, sleeplessness, agitation. What I've now done is I've got every individual who is diagnostically hypochondriacal, and I've got every individual who's the worried well flooding the public health system, banging on the door. The CDC comes back and says, nonsense, that's not real. I come back and say, that's fake news. And as a consequence of doing that, what I do is I create a schism between the polis and the public health system. I fracture the integrity of trust and reliance upon the population and its government. And of course, I'll be able to then incur a ripple effect. And if you want to see what this looks like in action, all you need is look back at those days prior to or post 9/11, when individuals were sort of sending white powder through the mail and everything was anthrax.
All right, I'm going to get Leo to comment. We come back and take your calls. We're going to get into this more tomorrow. I did this last night on TV to a degree, more tonight, and then on radio tomorrow with Karen Kingston, who brought this to us, and then we're going to invite Leo to come back and comment on this. This is shocking. And, folks, we're only scratching the surface. And this is like a 2017 presentation to some folks at the government. 1-800-347-9829. All right, welcome back. I want you to hear one more clip, then we'll go to the phone lines. Listen to this.
Infiltrate the brain space with nanoparticulate matter that aggregates in situ, on site in the brain, and does one of two things. Either penetrates from the vascular space, gets in through the bloodstream, gets in through the nose, through the mucosa, or infiltrates the vascular space and clogs it. What is the result? What's called a nanoparticulate stroke or a hemorrhagic diathesis, fancy word, for it's a predisposition to individuals having brain bleeds. Demonstrated? Oh, absolutely. We're able to show animal models of same, and the Italian group has done a fair amount of work demonstrating that nanoparticulate matter can be highly disruptive, not only of brain vascularity, but brain function. You may not necessarily incur a stroke, but you're going to begin to disrupt the network properties of the brain, and as a result, engage something more of a long wars effect through the use of these types of matters, where you now begin to influence the population in increasingly concentric circles of expansion. Moreover, you heard earlier, and I'm not going to beleaguer the point, of the idea of neurosensory devices and a whole host of trans and intracranial pulse stimulators. And of course, these can be used for a variety of things with key individuals. Once again, particularly when it comes to trans and intracranial devices, I'm not looking for this to be weapons of mass use. I'm looking to target key individuals who may then be influential to relative aspects of their representative groups. I can affect individuals' brain functions in a variety of different ways, both positively and negatively, by engaging or disengaging nodes and networks of the brain that therefore affect their cognitions, emotions, and ultimately their behaviors. Moreover, by understanding the way the brain works as nodes and networks and not as key sites that are doing any particular thing, I can also utilize various forms of electromagnetic radiation and energy to be able to disrupt brain function. The brain is an electromagnetic organ, and like any other electromagnetic substance, the integrity of those networks is reliant upon the electromagnetic pulses that flow in between them. Utilizing electromagnetic sensory and disruptive devices in this way, with ever greater fidelity and with ever greater granularity, can be used as not only an organ against individuals, but against groups. And in fact, this is some of the work that we've seen that has been conducted previously in what was the Soviet Union, now Russia, and also China is looking very, very deeply into what electromagnetic pulse generation can do to the brain with regard to treating diseases.
Oh, wow. Leo, before we go to the phone lines, this is 2017. He's talking about nanotechnology and blood clots. Hello?
Well, remember, I had posted an article well over, I think, about 2 years ago now, where the chief medical officer of Moderna was speaking at a TED talk in what, 2017, when he had said, we've hacked the human genome. We're able to go in and change the genetic codes in people. He said that. So this has been around, I'm told, since at least 2015, this technology. Now, I want to pull out one of the comments. There's so much in there that it's almost impossible to go over. But one thing, again, that jumped out at me in that last segment that you just, that last clip, he said it gets in through the nose and the mucosa. This, now, what have people been doing with COVID? Getting tested, having the swab shoved where? Up their nose into their mucosa. In some cases, penetrating the blood-brain barrier. Now, I have close friends and family members who've gotten these COVID tests. I tell them, are you crazy? You have no idea what they just stuck up your nose into your blood-brain barrier. This guy, I think, just answered the question. Now, another thing jumped out at me. He talked about the electromagnetic pulses and being activated. Now, what is also in these vaccines? Graphene oxide, graphene hydroxide. That is a conductor of what? Electromagnetic pulses.
Yep.
It's all fitting together
it
here,
is.
Brandon.
It is. It is. And, of course, we're going to do the whole show on this tomorrow with you and Karen Kingston, who brought us this video last night. Let's go to Dick, line one. Dick from Maryland. We always love hearing from you. Go ahead.
Yeah, Leo and Brandon, interested to hear this guy talk and think about Mr. Harari, the guy that gives advice to Klaus Schwab. Those two guys would get along very well. I also think about this gentleman looks like maybe he's the cousin of Anthony Fauci. Anthony Fauci was educated by Jesuits. This man is hired by the Jesuits at Georgetown. Let's not forget, Karen Kingston last night on your show mentioned the Jesuits and the Freemasonry.
I was the one that mentioned that, and she went on to say he claims to be a Jesuit. I'll have to verify that, but I was the one that was laying out the fact that Malachi Martin, the former Jesuit, was warning and left the Jesuits warning that the Jesuits, the Masons, and the Marxists were going to bring us the New World Order.
Well, and I think it's an example of the powerful, let's assume this gentleman is trained by Jesuits. He's certainly employed by them. This is the kind of energy and really exceptional people that the Jesuits can bring forward. They can create people like Frau Fauci and people like this gentleman, and they have done that. These people are around the world. Probably many of them have gone to the Carl Schwab Academy. I think we know about the people like Newsom in California and Trudeau in Canada. These are powerful people trained by Jesuits, infected with demonic notions, and they're very powerful people.
Indeed. Always great to hear from you. Let's go to Lee, line two. Lee, thanks for calling in, Lee. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Brandon. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Hey, first of all, these clips that you're playing, it just shows just the potential evil in the world. It's just listening to them, it's such evil. But I was going to say with these... like with this Parkland shooter, and the same thing with the Waukesha guy who drove through the parade.
Yes.
You know what they should do with those people? They should release them to the public. And before they do release them, they should broadcast when and where they're going to release this person to the public and just let them go.
Well,
and let the people do with them what they want to do. It might sound really terrible, but there's just been so much of this. They should just take him and just release him to the public and see what happens.
Well, I
know it sounds terrible, but
I know I totally
I'll listen to you off the air.
Thank you. I totally understand the frustration. I totally do. Here's what I think we should do to keep from turning to anarchy and vigilantism is that what we should do is we need to have speedy trials. These things cannot go on. We have speedy trials. It's done, and then there are public executions. They're broadcast nationwide for everyone to see. So we make an example, as Romans 13 talks about, the government to reward the righteous, punish the wicked, and if you do what is evil, then the government does not bear the sword in vain. DD from Glendale. DD, if you go fast, we'll get you
She's
in.
Gone.
She's gone? All right. Well, tomorrow we'll cover this more with more clips because with Karen and you, Leo, because this guy's just scratching the surface in 2017, what he's saying, and it sounds awfully similar to what's happening today with the nanotechnology. Closing comment, Leo?
Can't wait for tomorrow to hear more. Hear more from Karen and hear more from what you got to say, Brandon. Thanks.
All right. His website, leohoman.com, Leo. And then HOHMANN.com. Ours, worldviewradio.com, worldviewradio.com. Be sure to stay tuned for Crosstalk coming up with Jim Schneider next. Thanks for listening. Take care.
This has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brandon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to worldviewweekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, VCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of worldviewweekend.com and is heard weekdays on VCY America.